Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
On a very special episode of the Video Nasty Project, the legendary director that brought you Porno Holocaust and Ator the Fighting Eagle, Joe D'Amato, now brings you Absurd. So we just got done watching Absurd, and boy was it absurd.
Jeez.
All right.
Seriously.
Before we get going, so I found this little bit on the internet when I was doing research on the movie. I thought it was just absolutely crazy and completely either supports Mary Whitehouse's belief or completely undermines it. You make the call. So back in 1992, excuse me, there was a German black metal pagan band that took the name Absurd because of the movie. And then in 1993, they go on to strangle and murder a 15-year-old kid. Who then, the lead singer, Morbius, then goes on to say, oh shit, I've completely ruined my life. So they go into prison, they continue to record records, become a cult band, really popular with neo-Nazis. They get released out in 98 on parole because they were underage. And he goes right back into jail because he was doing the Nazi salute on the at a concert. Fled to the United States, attacked a dude with a hammer, and then then got extradited back to Germany to serve out his sentence. And now runs a record shop, a fascist record shop in Berlin.
The hell?
I thought you guys would find that funny. Completely unrelated to the movie, but...
Oh my god.
And the Germans let him back in?
Well, no, they threw him back into prison. They extradited him and threw him back into prison.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
So how about that movie?
Really good music.
Surprisingly good.
Your fixation on the music.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one previous to this was music a la Stinky. Whereas this was quite a bit better, especially in moments where they have stalking sequences, mm-hmm. where they're leading up to a jump scare or a red herring or something along those lines.
Spring loaded cat.
Yeah. And they, I really liked that aspect of it.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the movie?
Okay, so basically, this supposedly innocent man is running through the woods towards his house, where a woman is taking care of her crippled daughter, who has suffered some unknown accident.
Oh, some sort of spinal thing.
Yeah, she has a spinal impact injury, yeah. And it is in a neck brace and strapped down to a bed.
Basically invalid girl for the rest of the movie.
And her little brother is running around the house.
The most annoying brat in the world. Oh my God.
Where the hell
why did he not die? Okay, spoiler for the end of the movie. He doesn't die. And I prayed to God that every time he opened his goddamn mouth, it's like, please God, strangle him. But apparently D'Amato doesn't have...
He was the worst non-actor I've ever seen. If the kid was in fact an actor, then he was the really fucking suckiest actor in all of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. Oh my God.
No, not just all of Italy, all of Europe.
Yeah. Oh God. And so, this man is being chased by a guy in a trench coat, for reasons unknown, tries to get over this giant wrought iron fence with the spikes at the top. This man grabs him, pulls him down the spikes, he gets eviscerated, and his intestines
absolutely just
fall.
Impaled. Blah.
Oh, and by the way, this is a sequel to... pronounced title here.
Anthropophagus.
Thank you.
With the same lead actor.
Well, the thing is, it's not really a sequel. It's only a spiritual sequel in that it's a the same director, Joe D'Amato. It's the same lead, George Eastman. And it's the same vague concept. But it's more Halloween than Anthropophagus.
Yeah. But at any rate, the guy's gut injury is very similar to the... same actor's gut injury in the previous one. There's also a few other little roughs here and there, but that was pretty prominent.
And the characters from Greece, just like the characters in Anthropophagus.
So it's a vague connection, but I mean, it's really a loose one.
And he's basically loose in upstate or someplace in New York, in a rural New York town.
In New York, where because it's, in fact... It's Italy trying its damnedest to convince us that, in fact, it's New York.
Yeah.
There's one bit where they're eating pasta.
So they're at the Super Bowl.
No, yeah. They're watching it.
They're watching the Super Bowl. Endless amounts of watching the Super Bowl. And they're eating, well, your traditional Super Bowl treat.
Spaghetti.
With no sauce on it.
Yeah. Probably spaghetti al dente whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
potato skins, man. Give me them al dente potatoes.
Or barbecue chicken,
buffalo wings, whatever.
Yeah, but
Most of the characters in the movie have American accents. Out of the Italian actors, the only one who delivers the lines actually in English that matches the dubbing is the Italian actor playing the man in the trench coat. He wasn't dubbed, I don't think. I think he was actually speaking his lines in accented Italian.
Yeah, the not Donald Pleasance of the movie.
He was damn excellent. I mean, this man was just like, wow, on it. He was on point. Whereas some of the other actors you could tell were probably European, but dubbing didn't match exactly.
Spoiler alert. The man in the trench coat turns out to be a disguised priest.
Not much of a spoiler. Yeah. So he gets down off of the fence, and then he goes up into the house and collapses right in front of the little kid and the girl, who then they haul him off to the hospital, and he possesses some sort of weird X-Man regenerative powers because...
This is never well explained.
Well, they said there was some kind of experimentation going on, but there was also some kind of radiation leak or something. Some kind of thing got out.
Yeah, Donald Pleasance did something to him in the lab and now feels responsibility, and he spends the whole movie chasing him down.
And actually, once the killings start, they start off with a bang. Mm. Or actually, maybe more of a...
The killings.
Damn.
Well, we'll get to the killings in a second. So after that, they drop him off at the hospital. He regenerates, busts out, and then pretty much the movie consists of people not watching the Super Bowl, people watching the Super Bowl, and not Anthropophagus killing dudes. And that's pretty much the movie.
Oh, and Whiny Kid.
And Whiny Kid.
Yeah.
The thing is, so the one flaw that we had determined with Anthropophagus was that the movie was backloaded, that all the good stuff was in the last 20 minutes or so, right?
Yeah.
Here.
Or the lead-up.
Or the lead-up. So it's either the opening was pretty good, the end was pretty good, and then it was kind of a whole bunch of nothing in the middle. Here, it's about every 10 minutes, something really nasty happens. I mean, just like heads getting split nasty. Open, dudes getting run over, dude getting dragged off into the woods and murdered. I mean, just murder after murder after murder. Gal getting, my God.
Gal getting pickaxed, Gal getting shoved in oven.
You know, biker getting this fucked up, you know, after losing his bike. I mean,
my only complaint was that they didn't do more with the biker gang. They had a couple of subplots that didn't go anywhere, like the drunk dude who showed up, I was anticipating him being
a red herring.
He was going to be some sort of crazy Ralph, you're all doomed, and then get dragged off from the woods and die. I thought that's what was going to happen, and they did nothing with him. He just kind of vanished.
And he was more of a plot carrying device. Bit of a stereotype that he was Irish and drunk.
He serves this kind of a plot device for, you know, when he's around somebody, at least one person he's anywhere near is going to die.
Kind of
an evil Greek chorus, you know, in a way.
Did do a really good job with him as a red herring jump scare with the nurse.
Yeah.
When she's going through the woods, and really good suspense buildup, and then, bam, there's the drunk.
And you know what was really effective about that wood shot? Even though it was supposed to be day for night and they didn't actually have a filter on it, it was more creepy that it was just broad daylight
with great
shadows and great swaths of light here and there, you know, rather than actually shooting it at night.
They managed to keep the look of Anthropophagus going. It was this movie looked good. It looked really nice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
the lighting is spot on. The sets are good. I like the house that the family was in.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really nice house. Yeah. Cute dog.
Oh, yeah. That was also something a red herring, I thought. I thought the dog was going
to
bite it.
Well, he went out of the woods, and we never saw him again. He didn't return to the movie, so he might be alive, but he just kind of vanished.
He was outside, and the killer was inside. So the killer definitely...
Well, the killer might have gone outside and gotten him. I mean, it's...
We just don't know. But... We're left with the feeling that, okay, maybe the cute puppy did get away and all is right with the universe.
Then there was the oven bit. Oh my God, that was some excellent makeup.
God.
Jesus.
That was a brutal
kill. The best makeup job in the movie for my money is that whole, and they did.
And it was they drug it out just so long. God.
And not only that, but the character who the poor nurse who was being shoved in the ovens, Annie Bell's character, was a really good character too.
Yeah.
I mean, she was strong, she was intelligent. She gets up out of the oven and attacks the guy with the scissors later, and then gets whacked.
All her hair is finally burned off. Yeah. And she's just
that was a great makeup job on her.
Yeah, oh yeah.
My God, that was, and she was the noble sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely. I thought she was gonna make it, but she was the Obi-Wan of this movie.
Right,
definitely.
No, it was the cripple girl that was the final girl.
Yeah.
Oh, she was great.
Yeah.
Once she got out of the bed, I mean...
Well, that was some good suspense. They're all like, okay, she was fumbling with her belts that were kind of holding her to the bed and straightening out her spine. So that was stupid. But it was really suspenseful the way that Diamata was, like, cutting it.
Though that kid was just like, let me in.
Shut up. It's like, what do you expect your crippled aunt or sister to do? Is like, you know, what are you going to do? Get up out of the bed? And like, hurry up, hurry up. It was like, no, I'm fucking strapped down.
But she was definitely the smartest one in the group. You know,
when she got out of the bed, she was very clever and very resourceful. She made a couple of minor botches, but...
But that's to be expected under the circumstances.
Yeah.
And I mean, that stab... You know,
with the compass, with the dry
compass. Chekhov's compass.
Holy shit.
Oh, whoa.
That was good.
That was good.
And the diversion with the record player afterwards because he was blind.
And she was damn cute, too.
Yeah, she was.
You know, I was thinking, oh, man, is something going to happen to her?
I was traumatized by that poor nurse who got ovened.
I know.
Because she was cute.
And, I mean, yeah, her hair was all melty. I mean, it was really well done.
Yeah.
All right, so what was your favorite kill then?
I would say the oven.
Pick one. You gotta go with the oven. All right.
Gotta go with the oven.
I gotta go
with the
oven. With Gavin. All right. You, what's your favorite? The drill?
The nurse. The poor nurse at the very beginning.
And I'm gonna have to go with the dude on the in the slaughterhouse with the I mean, just so all the kills were so dragged out. I mean, just so you're used to the MPAA censoring Friday the 13th and making the kills really super brief. No, these are like 30 seconds, 45 seconds of just gushing blood. And I mean, and she's whacking him with the hatchet and just blood everywhere. And it's like, oh my God. Oh,
and a lot of the victims were like, have that moment of, oh shit, where they're aware of what's going on and there's not a damn thing they can do about it.
And they drag it out for about the first 5 seconds, you know it's not going to stop. There's no save in this. This is not only the teens in the house, this is the adults in the house and no adult supervision, you know, no cops coming to the rescue. And I mean, holy crap. I mean, that saw bit. I mean, and there were times they were probably using sides of beef or some kind of meat, because that was actual meat they were going into, not
a gummy.
It's just like, that just gives it that extra visceral thing.
Yeah.
The only time I thought was really cheesy near the beginning was when they're operating on George Eastman, and they're obviously, like, just sticking, you know, these forceps into, like, sides of
beef
steak
or something, yeah.
And they're just sticking it in. They're not actually sewing anything up. They're not siphoning any blood out. You know, they're not cutting anything. They're just prodding around like they did in those days.
Oh, and the one of the surgical monitoring devices was in French.
Yeah, yeah. The console thing is in French. You know, the Italians probably got some French surplus, you know, because, you know, Franco-Italian stuff. Mm-hmm. They're right next door to each other.
But even though this was supposed to be in the United States...
Yeah.
Eh.
So look, I got it from Canada.
It's the Super Bowl, man. It's America, fuck yeah.
Strange things happen during the Super Bowl anyways. The cop, the detective, he was interesting. Chain smoker, kind of nasty to his partner. I'm not sure if he was just being a dick or if he was racist, but...
It was the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, I suppose the 70s, because it was 79 to 81.
Plus, it's a small town thing, you know, and this shit's exploding out of nowhere, and he's probably used to bikes and drunks and the occasional, you know, falling off a roof, somebody doing some roofing accident.
But he was a worthwhile character in that he was a good plot engine.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely would help propel the plot forward.
You know the irony? I recently acquired a shoulder holster for my toy guns. I was thinking of bringing it, and I didn't.
Oh, well.
And this movie's full of guys with shoulder holsters with guns.
Oh, God. Okay, so the movie does, in fact, fall into a couple of horror tropes that were just... the one scene where they're, you know, she's... It was the pretty nurse was going out to babysit, and she's just walking along this deserted path, and it's all kind of scary, and they're kind of building the suspense, and she just falls over. Thud.
Which seems kind of contrived.
Which seems stupid, because it's a clear, empty path that has no obstacle. She's not being chased, and... Well, here, let me demonstrate something to you real fast.
Yeah, you're right.
See how
even a blind person could do it.
And I'm not blind, thank God. So, so a clear path, anyone can do it. You can And it seems to be a trope, because the last episode had.
Yeah, and even in the previous movie, it was
marginally
better because the lady was pregnant and she was going down a ramp.
She could have stepped on the curb badly. Lord knows I've done that plenty of times and turned my ankle. But I mean, this is just nothing. It was like, you know, the worst of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I would say definitely that the pacing is really good in there. I mean, your peripheral characters are pretty good, even though a couple of them don't really function as anything other than kind of a jump scare or a spring-loaded cat, but they only appear sporadically.
Right.
And well, they don't really drop.
There's the Irish girl. She doesn't really appeal to me much, but, you know.
I think the story in Anthropophagus was stronger, such as it is. This is pretty much a connected series of events from A to B to C to D, straight line, no real, you know, so there's not really a lot there to hold up.
The plot is very weak.
Yeah. But it makes up for it by giving you lots and lots of murder in a constant stream.
Yeah. And everything else about it was really spot on. Yeah. I mean, the direction, the acting, the lighting, the music, mm-hmm. the sets, the atmosphere.
Right. And if you go and watch a, say, Singing in the Rain, and you're not watching it for the plot to get from A to B to C. All it is a basic skeleton to get you from the next musical number to the next musical number. This is, all it needs to do is get you from the next murder to the next murder, and it does mm-hmm. that just fine.
Yeah. That's true.
In fact, one of the BBFC's releases on this, one of the cuts they demanded, was pretty much cut 3 minutes of violence out of this movie, which then means you've got nothing but plot. So it's like, what the hell?
No.
You've cut all the good bits out. Why am I watching this? This is stupid.
It essentially lives up to its title then. So you've got the art design of this house, which looks like somebody who spends a lot of time collecting stuff just to collect it, like those leather-bound chairs in the
or
study.
Or the suit of armor in the hallway.
Suit of armor.
And that really cool desk.
Yeah, and the house is really, really, I would say almost, kind of, well, there's a lot of European influence in there, mm-hmm. obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot more than an American would have in their place.
Right.
But, you know, in terms
of,
like,
man. I've seen some people's houses where they're really into antiques, you know.
Yeah, antiques and stuff. Although most of the stuff in his house appears to be fully functional.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff in house seems to be creepy as fuck. Like, for example, that painting I can't figure out which was more freaky in that shot. The, you know, George Eastman and the look that he was giving us, or the creepy picture that was right behind
him. It was definitely that
the old
woman.
Lady.
Those eyes. I swear to God, twice the left eye blinked. It looked like it was blinking when the nurse stepped out of the room, you know, to go after George Eastman. It looked like it blinked once, and she walked past it and blinked again. That could be a trick of the light. Maybe somebody off camera was moving, but it looked like it was...
Or just strobing on the DVD. Who the hell knows?
But it definitely added to that creepiness. And that was just the only thing in the house that was creepy. You can notice there isn't really much in the house in the way of exploration, any creepy places. You know, everything's well lit,
mm-hmm.
pretty much.
Well, there is that one niche in the kitchen that's right next to the window. That's
oh, yeah,
dark.
Where he steps up out of the shadows.
Yeah,
and,
that's dark.
Yeah, and once again, that damn kid does not scream when this strange man he's seen before, you know, enters his house, is hiding, reaching down for him with these huge, giant Lana Kane hands. And this kid doesn't scream. He just says, Emily, or whatever, you know.
Emily, that's
calling his sister.
And then after...
No,
after,
the nurse. He was calling the nurse.
Oh, the nurse.
And then after, you know, 30 seconds, whatever, him standing there, he... And then runs off.
The only time he does scream is when he's out in the open and...
In the living room.
Mm-hmm. And George is trying to kill somebody else. Or going after, I think, was it going after the nurse?
Yeah.
She was trying to distract him. And then he screams and runs away. It's like, what the fuck? Why didn't you do that when you were alone with this guy? What the hell?
Oh, one of the other things that kind of disappointed me about the pacing and the plotting, that I wish there had been retribution for the parents, the rich son of a bitch and his wife. You know, so he's driving home, runs over George Eastman, and then says, oh, I guess I hit a deer, and then drives off back home.
He keeps going, yeah.
And then he has a little bit of conflicted guilt towards the end where he talks to his wife. It's halftime during the Super Bowl, so they go and have this heart-to-heart, and nothing comes of it. It's like, I so wanted not Anthropophagus to just choke the fuck out of him because of running him over with the car.
Yeah.
So so the bikers didn't get any resolution there. I wanted to see more of them getting killed. Mm-hmm. I wish that they'd done something with a crazy drunk dude, and I wish the father and gotten some sort of retribution.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Also, the other thing is, regarding the father, is he didn't seem very nice to his wife or his son.
He's a rich dick.
Yeah, a rich white man of privilege.
In fact, since they never really name him, I'm just going to call him Rich Dick.
Yeah.
I mean, Dick is a last name, Rich is a first name. It just seems perfectly fine.
There you go.
His wife was sympathetic. You know, she calls up regularly to see, you know, what are her two babysitters are doing and whether the actually competent babysitter has shown up yet, the cute nurse. And, you know, seeing how her kids are doing. And, you know, she's obviously at her stricken invalid daughter's bedside regularly. And she often is a little bit harsh to her well-deserving of harshness son.
But Daddy, no, Daddy's a non-entity. Yeah. Well, of course, I mean, the characters really aren't that fleshed out beyond their stereotypes. They're, you know, crippled girl, annoying kid. You know, there's not a lot of depth to any of them. They're just pretty much ciphers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, would you recommend it?
Hell yeah.
All right.
I would watch this over and over again, at least twice.
Okay.
I mean, there's so much to see in it. It's so, you know, just carries you right along. I mean, the kills come bam, bam, bam. And, you know, it's just satisfying for the most part. I mean, there are a couple of parts that had me going, eh. But, you know, no, I'd watch it again.
All right. Better than Anthropophagus?
Hell yes.
All right.
I liked Anthropophagus. I've been waiting to see it for a long time, but this, to my liking, is better.
All right.
I would agree.
You'd like it again?
I would watch it again. I don't think I'd watch it very often, but then again, watching something repeatedly kind of takes away some of the juiciness of it. But, you know, definitely watch it again.
All right. I own the thing, so I guess I'm stuck with the full thing. I would keep the disc, so mm-hmm. I'm staying on the shelf. I thought it was, in fact, light years better than Anthropophagus. Anthropophagus wasn't a bad movie, but it wasn't a great movie. I think this is a much stronger, not, I wouldn't so far as to say great, but it is certainly a very strong, very good movie, so.
Yeah, yeah. I'd give it a solid B.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a B movie.
Mm-hmm. B for Blade in the head! So, all right. So that's bye for me. That's
bye for me.
Ciao, Bella.
Well, okay then.
And thus ends the Anthropophagus saga. A nice little bit of moist movie making for your viewing pleasures. Please join us again here next time when we get another movie off the video shelves for your edutainment. Edutainment, that's not even a word. Education and entertainment and enlightenment. In the meantime, if you could, please like, share, and subscribe our stuff. And we'll catch you again next time. Ciao.